Earlier this year, we looked at the natural fibers, wool and silk, on Please Explain. So this week, we thought we would find out about the fake stuff, polyester and other synthetics. They're used in carpeting, building materials, and, of course, clothing. And they've come a long way since their leisure suit days in the 1970s. Sean Cormier, assistant professor in the Textile Design and Marketing Department at the Fashion Institute of Technology, is here, along with Jill Dumain, director of environmental initiatives at Patagonia. And they're joining us to explain how polyester and other synthetics are made and how they're used. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Sean, let's begin with you. What is polyester made of?
Well, polyester comes basically from petroleum products. It's a long-chain synthetic molecule that is formed. And from the polyester, we take it and extrude it through a spinneret. A spinneret is similar to a shower head, where you take a chemical and you produce fibers. So that's basically how polyester is formed.
And it's a polyethylene terephthalate?
Yes.
That's PET? The same material that most plastic water bottles are made of?
Absolutely.
So what came first, the polyester or the plastic water bottles?
The polyester was introduced by DuPont Chemical back in the 1950s. The first synthetic fiber that was developed was nylon, and then they moved on to rayon. And then with continuing the scientific process, they moved on to polyester.
And there seems to be a lot of variety in polyester. It can be thick or thin, sheer, textured. Are there different kinds of polyester, or is it all just a matter of the size of the hole in the shower head?
Well, that's one of them. But there's basically two types, the PET and the PETA. And it's the PET.
Wait, PETA is also against killing any animals.
Well, right. No, well, not that one. But the PET is what we use for most of our apparel products, and then the other one is used mostly for the industrial products.
Jill, when was polar fleece first made?
In the late 70s, a company by the name of Malden Mills, which has now become Polar Tech, really evolved that in about 1979.
And they make it from recycled plastic?
They do now. At the time, it was not. Recycled polyester was really introduced to the apparel industry in the early 90s, around 1992.
So what were they making it out of originally?
It was virgin oil that was going through the process that was just explained.
So it's the same sort of thing, just a different application of petroleum. Can it now be recycled?
Yes, it can, and actually there's quite a lot of it in the industry that is recycled. It's still a minority of the quantity used, but Patagonia first introduced a recycled polyester fleece in 1992.
Now, since this is petroleum, are all of these products biodegradable?
No, they're not. They're not. Unlike the natural fibers, I like the introduction of going from natural fibers to fake fibers that we're talking about today. They are not biodegradable in their typical sense.
And why wouldn't they be? They're petroleum? Could they just break up into their original molecular structures?
Well, it's a very slow process. They do eventually break down, but as Jill said, unlike cotton and wool products, it's a very, very long process for it to break down, which is why we don't really term it as a biodegradable.
Well, let's talk about, oh, by the way, we invite our listeners to join into the conversation. Our number here is 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC. My guests are Sean Cormier of FIT and Jill Dumain of Patagonia. I'm Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC, WNYC.org. Can we talk about some of the other synthetic fabrics?
Well, but just to follow up on the polar fleece idea, one of the reasons why polar fleece keeps you so warm is because you're really taking two polyester fibers, twisting them together, and then knitting your product.
Is that what gives them their fluffy texture?
Well, that's the second process. It's the actual brushing of the fabric then that raises those fiber hairs that gives you that brushy feel. Once you shear it and finish it, then you have something that can trap the air, trap the warm air produced by your body, and that's really what keeps you warm.
But, Jill, to some degree, that sounds like the sort of thing we do with wool. So have we created something that's the equivalent of wool?
Well, I would say that was some of the initial the initial goals of fleece being developed from polyester back in the 70s. But the advantage of polyester is you have a wider range of comfort, and you're able to manipulate the fabric through finishing to actually move moisture around. And so through the application of some finishes in the dyeing process, you can move the moisture away from your body out to the outer layers, so you actually stay drier next to skin.
And also, because it's a thermoplastic fiber, which means it can be heat set and it has a memory, like wool and cotton will tend to flatten out over time and creating less of that trapped air on your body. Because of
breathe.
We'll get to breathing. We can make polyester breathe as well. But the nice thing is that because it's a thermoplastic fiber and has a memory, then it doesn't lose its shape. So it'll actually keep you warmer longer over time.
And the other thing with that is it's a much lighter weight fiber than wool, so you can make super lightweight polyester fleeces that will keep you the same warmth amount as a much heavier wool sweater would. So that's why we like it in the active sports industry.
And you can manipulate the fiber as well to create hollow areas within the fiber, which is also going to help trap the air.
But you can usually spot when something is a polyester or some kind of a synthetic as opposed to wool and cotton. And some people immediately look down their noses at them, don't they? I mean, would it be possible to make a polyester shirt that really looked like cotton?
With today's finishing techniques, I think that you can almost get there. There is a little bit more of a shine, but because we can take the polyester and we can control the size and the shape of the fiber itself, much like what we were talking about with the shower head, we can make things look a lot more natural than they did a while ago.
You mentioned that there were other ones that started this whole thing. What was nylon the first?
Nylon, and then rayon. Those were the initial synthetic fibers. Nylon, basically for your stockings because of its strength and its stretchability.
And they were originally developed to replace natural things, nylon to replace silk, which had become difficult to obtain during World War II.
Exactly, and that's what we're trying to feed off of. And one of the nice things about mixing or blending our fibers is that today we can get the best of both worlds. For instance, I don't really wear any 100% cotton shirts anymore because I don't really like to iron my shirts. So by wearing a combination of cotton and polyester, I can get the breathability and the softness offered by the cotton, but the wrinkle resistance offered by the polyester.
Well, how is it put together in the case of the polyester and the cotton, or let's say jeans that might be 95% cotton, 5% spandex?
In the case of the polycotton shirts, cotton staple fiber is about an inch and a half or so. So what we do is we take the polyester fibers that we've made and we chop them down to make them look a lot like cotton. Then we spin those two fibers together and we get something that shrinks less, wrinkles less, but still has the comfort and absorbency of cotton.
And then there's also different techniques that we use a lot in the outdoor industry with keeping the polyester next to skin, and so it would be a knitting application where you take two yarns in and knit on the front and the back of the fabric, so you have the cotton on the outside, so it looks very natural like a normal t-shirt, but then you have your polyester next to skin, and it can help move the moisture away in an active activity and not stay as wet as a cotton t-shirt would against you.
Yeah, it's interesting that some of these things have so many different ways of adapting themselves. For example, nylons, you can make them very sheer for stockings. But isn't nylon also used to make mechanical parts like screws? Do either of you know about that?
No,
that goes beyond my
knowledge. I can't address that.
You're both in the clothing business.
But you mentioned spandex earlier before. Well, spandex is a different type of fiber. That's an elastomeric fiber. And the reason why we use that is for its stretchability.
Is that also made from petroleum?
Yes, but it's a whole different process than than polyester. But the nice thing about the spandex is that it gives the fit to the jeans that women are really looking for. It kind of molds to the body and allows more flexibility and movement. So the thing about synthetic fibers is that I think they've come a real long way since the early days, and I don't think people should be really snubbing their nose because we're really using them much more today than ever before.
Well, there's also the problem of them coming out of petroleum, and people are concerned that we are looking at dwindling resources. It's become a major part of even this election campaign. Where do we get our oil from? But that's a whole other issue here. Rayon is not made from petroleum. It's made from regenerated cellulose fiber, Jill?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
What does that mean? This was developed in the early 1900s.
Yeah, it was, and it has barely changed, actually, since that time. But I once referred to it as a little bit of the hot dog of the fabric industry because I was at a rayon plant once, and it was unbelievable the cellulose that they could turn into fabric. So from a raw material standpoint, they really took the discard and the waste from a lot of industries, from paper and from other fabrics that were waste items, and they were able to take it into a solvent process, which is where some of the problem comes in with rayon from an environmental standpoint, but then extrude it into what was more similar to a man-made fiber. So it is this sort of hybrid fiber sitting between natural and synthetic.
Now, we talked about it not wrinkling or being wrinkle resistant. Why doesn't it wrinkle the way other fabrics do?
That's due to its thermoplasticity. That's the ability for us to give it basically a memory. And when we heat set and finish the goods, we give it a memory of not to wrinkle.
But one of the differences between it and natural fibers is you iron them, when you do iron them, at much lower temperatures, don't you, Jill? I've actually melted a shirt once or twice.
You can. But that's the nice thing about polyester here is in some of the base layer long underwear application that the outdoor industry first used was in polypropylene and has a much lower melting temperature. So if it got stuck against the drum on the dryer, it could actually come out rigid. And it would change its form back to the thermoplasticing that Sean's talking about. With polyester, it has a much higher melt temperature, so it's a much more, it's an easier fiber to take care of for the consumer.
But they're still more flammable than cotton or other natural fibers. In 2006, the Marines in Iraq banned synthetics made by Under Armour and Coolmax and Nike because they increased the risk of burns. Can you explain how fibers are treated to be flame retardant?
Well, there's a number of different chemistries and chemicals out there that actually help that. It's not that polyester necessarily burns. It's more that it melts. It doesn't really continue a flame. It just melts in the process of heat. And we now have, there's chemicals, things like by the Clarion Company called Percoflam, that enable the polyester to burn or melt less, yes.
Let's put a caller on who wants to talk about this. Michael, hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. I've called before. I was listening to your show, great show. I have a story. I have a neighbor. I'm a Freeport, Long Island resident, and my neighbor, Roy, had a manufacturing company for clothing. And he would always tell this story about being one of the first guys to be approached by DuPont to actually take this fiber and actually create clothing with it. So he tried it, and it would catch fire because of the friction of the needle would cause it to flame. So he thought he'd lose his shirt. I mean, the guy was like really said he was going to almost lose his company because he had put all his money in this. And then supposedly they came up with a special needle that would supposedly allow the needle to go through the fiber without creating so much friction.
Does that make sense to you, Jill?
Boy, that story was well before my time. I think polyester had come a long way since that time. It's hard to imagine enough friction of a sewing machine going that fast to actually ignite it. But I don't know, Sean, you might know more about that than I do.
Yeah, that sounds very strange. But today we basically treat them with a bunch of different types of softeners because I do know that the sewing machines do create and generate a lot of heat. And it is a problem with like fibers like Tencel. Tencel is another cellulosic fiber made from wood pulp, which is very strong and durable and simulates that of cotton. It can sometimes damage sewing needles, and we do need to treat it with silicones so there's less friction.
Sewing wood in that case?
Again, it's much like the rayon in that we regenerate wood pulp. So it's another one of what I like, man-made natural fibers.
Well, it is replenishable. Wood is replenishable, whereas oil is not.
Correct.
But there are reasons that we use the petroleum-based synthetics. They just seem to be so much more – there's so much more variable potential uses for them?
Not necessarily. It's just that they're more available.
Ah. Okay. Well, we will take
but
a little...
You can also create a lot of different kinds of fabrics with polyester, and Tencel and the regenerated ones are more limited. You still have that absorption like you do with cotton because they are the cellulose to start with, whereas in the performance industry anywhere where I have worked for so long, the polyester is more attractive to us in the active sports area.
And moisture management is something that has really come a long way. At FIT now, we actually have a machine that can actually test moisture management. So us in the textile development and marketing people, we're trying to show our students these variable properties of the different fibers so that they're more experienced when they go out into industry.
We have to take a little break. We'll come back with more from my guest, Sean Cormier, assistant professor in the Textile Design and Marketing Department at the Fashion Institute of Technology, and Jill Dumain, director of environmental initiatives at Patagonia. We're talking about synthetics on today's Please Explain, and we are taking your calls. If you have questions, give us a call at 212-433-9692. We'll leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. We are back with Jill Dumain, Director of Environmental Initiatives at Patagonia, and Sean Cormier, Assistant Professor in the Textile Design and Marketing Department at the Fashion Institute of Technology here in New York. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. We're talking about synthetic fabrics and related matters. And we go now to John. Hi, John. You're on the air. John from Paramus? Yes.
You. Yeah, how you doing? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about Thinsulate. You know, I see that in gloves and stuff like that. I want to know what is the best material for gloves anyway. I always see Thinsulate, but I don't think it's that warm. I have leather and fur-lined gloves that kind of keep me warm, but what is that Thinsulate? So?
Jill?
So Thinsulate is a non-woven, and it's a bunch of fibers that are laid down together, and it's meant to be really puffy and lofty. So back to how we spoke at the beginning of trapping air. Trapping air is really the best way to keep yourself warm. And Thinsulate and different types of non-woven insulations, they do have a tendency to compress over time. So they might be warm at the beginning and then compression down. And it's hard with gloves because you don't have a lot of space in those little fingers to get air. But that might be why a wool-lined or a shearling-lined one keeps you warmer, is that you have more air trapped in those fibers.
Well, how are they put together, something like Thinsulate, if it isn't woven?
Well, there's actually three categories of fabrics out there. There's wovens, there's knits, and there's the category of what's called non-wovens. Jill is absolutely right. Thinsulate is made by non-woven materials. We spoke about polypropylene.
You just smush it together?
Well, you use a process what they call needle punching. And basically, yes, you're taking these fibers and just linking them together through a needle punch process.
Oh, I understand weaving and the others, but go ahead.
It can also be done with heat as well, where the fibers are all laid down and it goes through where they barely melt enough to stick together.
Ah.
And all of those categories are non-wovens, like Sean said.
But John's point is well taken, that Thinsulate might be warm at the beginning, but it loses its warming characteristics as time goes on. So we might just buy that from somebody who's selling gloves on the street, knowing that we're going to lose them within a week anyway.
Yeah, and Thinsulate is a brand name of a category that uses a lot of this lofty, and it has as much to do with the material as the construction. And that's maybe, too, why mittens might keep your hands a little warmer, even though you lose the dexterity. You have the body heat, and you don't have that compressibility in each of the fingers.
Now, are these things all copyrightable? As I understand it, the Koch brothers own Lycra, even though it was developed by DuPont. Are these things owned by different they're developers till time for time immemorial?
There are patents that are developed, but they do have the life of a patent, and we do have quite a few of those in the textile industry. What happened with the spandex or the Lycra is it's made by a company actually called Invista, which was a fiber division of DuPont. They spun it off, and they sold it, and the Koch brothers are part of the ownership of that now.
And I love the fact that you said they spun it off.
Yeah, right.
That's no very fabricy.
20 years in the textile industry will do that to you.
John from Westchester, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Is it me?
Yes, you.
Hi. What I'd like to know is if they could please tell what exactly is microfiber. It doesn't look like a brand name. You see it everywhere from furniture to apparel. What is microfiber?
Microfiber refers to the size of the actual fiber. So you can go from very thick fibers down to very thin fibers, and then there's a certain level then where they're even thinner, and that's where we call them microfibers. They're very soft and supple, which is why we like them.
And are they also sturdy? Because we put them on our furniture often. We're going to be sitting on them for long periods of time.
Yes, they're still very durable. Yes, they're found in furniture, outerwear products.
Jill, I suspect you include it in some of the products you make at Patagonia?
We do, because of the softness that you get from there and some of the suppleness. And if you go back to Sean's explanation of the shower head, the spinneret of how fiber is made, a microfiber just puts more holes in that shower head, so you get a lot more fiber strands into the overall yarn, and that gives you the softness and the suppleness.
Now, Jill, can you tell us about Gore-Tex? A listener called in. How is that also a non-woven?
Gore-Tex is actually a technology. It's a barrier technology or a coating that would go on to keep the fabric waterproof. So it's a film that is made by company W.L. Gore that is then applied to fabrics to make that fabric waterproof.
Let's take another call. Anne, hi, you're on the air.
Hi there, Leonard. I was just curious. I was very amazed to hear that that polyester is made out of the same thing as bottles. And I was wondering if that means it also has PVA, that bisphenol A that everyone's so worried about.
The bisphenol A, the BPA?
Yeah.
No, polyester doesn't. That really was an element in polycarbonate bottles, which were the rigid bottles, not the ones that you can squish more easily like the water bottles that come.
And that was designed to give them a certain kind of heft, whereas you do not want a bottle that is like the same, made out of the same kind of material that you're wearing as a shirt.
And it's a higher grade. The PET that goes into water bottles is a food grade, and there's all sorts of regulations that the FDA puts on that. And that's what made it a great raw material to start with the recycling into apparel, because we didn't need as high of a grade of polyester as they use in the food industry.
Now,
so we were able to take those bottles.
Another listener asked about cleaning polyester and other synthetics. Is washing them the best way, or should they be dry cleaned in some instances?
Generally, polyester is machine washed, tumble dried. It is a hydrophobic fiber, so there's certain things, stains, that when they get in there are a little bit more difficult to be removed. But generally, it's easily washable, easily wearable, and it's really an easy care fiber.
A listener in Chicago asked, why does a jacket made from recycled water bottles wind up costing $300? Is the process difficult or expensive, or am I simply paying for the fact that I can't make my own polyester jacket?
No, cost has a lot to do. Whenever we introduce in a new environmental initiative, there's a few things going on. It's usually a very new technology, so it's available in limited quantities. There isn't a scale of economy, so we are competing against a polyester industry that's very, very mature and very, very large. And when we're trying to do something very small in that, it costs more. Your runs are shorter. You're not running plants 24 hours a day. So you don't have that scale of economy as it evolves. However, I will say that it's actually come down in price since we first introduced it, and we're starting to get more efficiencies. People are more familiar with it in the processing. And I just had a vendor, I forget what they were making, but they were starting to tell me that on a raw material basis, there is some parity that should be happening soon.
A listener left this question on our show page. If I remember correctly, older versions of polyester shirts would hold on to body odor after washing. Have the fabrics changed so that that's no longer the problem?
Generally, polyester does not really hold microbes. It's generally a fabric that's microbe-free, which is really where the odors generally come from. But today we can treat our fabrics with antimicrobial treatments, such as Sanitize, which can help odor control greatly.
Do synthetics last longer than cotton or silk or wool?
Generally speaking,
hold
yes.
Their shapes better?
Yes, they can. Polyester definitely holds its shape better over time than your cottons.
We go now to Olivia from the Bronx. Hi, Olivia.
Hi, how are you? I was just wondering, I'm assuming that when you're making all these artificial fibers that there are some toxic byproducts, and I'm wondering how that's handled.
Jill?
Well, the one thing on this is these are very large plants, and it's up to the individual manufacturers and the brands. I mean, Patagonia takes that very seriously to understand our supply chain and know where our products are coming from and to understand what is happening. And so if there are waste items, whether they're toxic or not, they are captured and treated properly.
Yeah, the textile industry today has come a long way, and we are very concerned about the environment. And we've made a number of improvements across the board about how we make things in a better, more ecologically friendly way. So we are looking at these things, we are trapping these contaminants, and we're treating them so that we don't really pollute much anymore.
Diana from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? You've stated that first came nylon, then came rayon. Well, I thought rayon was invented in the 1890s and was called artificial silk. I wonder.
We didn't say that nylon came before rayon. In fact, we just talked about it before we talked about the rayon. I think I said that rayon, I said around 1900 or so, but I'm willing to go 1890.
That's actually
1896,
yes.
Give or take.
Yeah, it was in the 1890s it was developed.
Yeah, well, and your point, Diana, other than to correct us, is there some other thing you want to say about rayon?
Well, just that nylon and the polyesters are a vast improvement because rayon tends to pucker and wrinkle and shrink sometimes, and it's not. It was the first synthetic, as you know, but it was not the best.
Well, thank you for calling us.
Thank you.
Aren't there new synthetics that are actually being developed to screen out UV rays and other dangerous things?
Well, there are treatment processes that we do put on our fabrics that help them be UV protected. A lot of people are concerned about ultraviolet rays on their skin, for instance, you know, certain types of cancer. So a number of companies have come out with T-shirts, for instance, that actually on their hang tag identify a sun protectant factor, or SPF, much like sunscreen.
Tom from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I had a question about the strength rating of nylon that I've seen specifically in, I guess, performance-type fabrics or textiles, and it seems to be measured by something called the denier
refers to the size or the thickness of the actual yarn. It's a length-to-weight ratio, which tells you how basically the diameter of the yarn.
Okay, thank you so much for calling us, and my great thanks to our guests today on Please Explain, this look at synthetic fibers. Is there anything that we have left out?
They've come a long way.
We could go on for hours.
Well, we're only going to go along for another 15 seconds. My great thanks to you, Jill Germain, Director of Environmental Initiatives at Patagonia, and Sean Cormier. The American pronunciation, assistant professor in the Textile Design and Marketing Department at the Fashion Institute of Technology. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.